Okay. Fantastic. That's all right. Why not? Whatever you like. That sounds like a good plan.
Somebody else. So who's the face?
Not only that, you're going to have more people coming. Fashionably late, right?
Maybe, yes, Maharaj. Maybe. We don't know. It all depends. Today's a special day.
I was looking at you all for thinking, wow, nice fall flowers. Now, what are you going to do? Have snowflake?
Maybe.
Okay. I was thinking maybe because people tend to come a little late around Chabad and Tato, you all can come forward a little bit and move those redundancies so the ladies can come forward a little bit. There's everybody. I see. High chair is for kids. You're a big kid.
Big kids too.
Big kids too. Very nice. So, some of our younger boys here. We're going to speak something from Srimad Bhagavatam, and part of it's stories and part of it's going to be some philosophy, and you may get restless. So you know what to do if you get restless? Like you go, you know, like want to go have some fun or something? There's downstairs, right? You think that's going to happen? No? You can play Mridanga on your knees all class long and you'll be happy. No? Okay. So I was having a discussion recently about a passage from Srimad Bhagavatam, and I thought it would be nice to share the topic. So I'll start with some quiz questions, and I'd appreciate it if you raise your hand and then I'll call on you so then we can be a little bit orderly about the answers. The Pandavas have a very, very special relationship with Krishna. Very special relationship with Krishna. Who'd like to describe that special relationship that the Pandavas have with Krishna? All five of them. All five. Special relationship. Anyone want to volunteer? What's that?
Friendship.
Okay. Aside from the rasa kind of, you know, meaning, special kind of relationship. Special kind of relationship.
Puti Devi is Krishna's aunt. So...
Okay. They're directly related to Krishna. And their mother is the sister of Krishna's father. Okay. Anything else? Special.
Loving relationship.
Okay, I'll try a different direction. One of the incarnations of the Supreme Lord is named Nara-Narayana. Nara-Narayana. Who can say something about Nara-Narayana? Yes.
Narayana, or, Narayana is actually an incarnate, Narayana Rishi, and Nara is actually Arjuna.
Arjuna. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Nara is actually Arjuna. So Nara Narayana as an incarnation is two forms, Nara and Narayana, Arjuna and Krishna, or Nara and Narayana. Now I'll ask the question again. The Pandavas have a very special relationship with Krishna. All five of them. What is that special relationship?
Friendship.
Huh?
Friendship.
Friendship. Well, but specifically, I'll volunteer.
Let me associates, they are more like Krishna's associates.
Yes. I'll ask you, so in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna that when I spoke this science to the sun god Vivaswan, you were also there. Yes?
Yes.
So, the Pandavas have a very special relationship with Krishna. Wherever Krishna performs his Bhoma Leela, Arjuna is there and the Pandavas are there. Wherever Krishna performs his Bhoma Leela, according to the Bhagavatam, when Krishna departed, the Mahabharata describes differently. When in Bhagavatam, when Krishna departed, what did the Pandavas do? They went and joined Krishna. Because they're part of Krishna's Bhoma Leela, wherever Krishna goes. We've heard this description from Prabhupada that Krishna, just like the sun is always rising somewhere on earth, and somewhere the sun is setting, and somewhere it's midday on earth, somewhere. Similarly, Krishna is eternally performing his pastimes like that, where somewhere Krishna is appearing, and then somewhere Krishna is appearing, and somewhere Krishna is appearing, and somewhere Krishna is appearing, and somewhere Krishna is appearing. And somewhere it's the middle part of Krishna leaves, Vrindavan, and he goes to Mathura. And somewhere Krishna is leaving. And it is this. Prabhupada used the word spool, that's a common word in English for thread that's on a spool. But Prabhupada used that term, however, in a similar way during that period of time. Motion pictures was literally motion pictures. It was images and images and images on film, and the film was wrapped on a spool, and the spool of film was fed through a projector. And then, the silver screen, they used that term. So, Krishna's pastimes are being unfolded like a spool, like again and again and again and again and again. There's a very insightful question that Giriraj Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada during one morning walk, where Giriraj Maharaj said, listen carefully to the question and to the answer, Prabhupada, you've taught us that Krishna's pastimes are going on one after the next in this material world. Krishna's appearing and Krishna's appearing and Krishna's appearing. And you've also told us that the Pandavas are eternally associates with Krishna. They're ever with Krishna in the performance of his pastimes. So, question. Does that mean that when Krishna appears in another universe, then another universe, then another universe, that Arjuna is also appearing with him? Does Arjuna also expand like Krishna expands? Because there's pastime finishing up over here and there's pastime beginning over there. So there's like multiple Arjunas. Follow the question?
Yeah.
And Prabhupada gave the answer, yes. Krishna expands. Arjuna expands. Did you know that? Because he's eternally associated with Krishna. Now how does it... Prabhupada didn't give the technology. You know, how does a jiva expand? But Krishna can do whatever he likes, however the technology works. Because that intimacy of love is such. There's many mysteries in bhakti and Bhagavad Dharma that I could list a few of them, and you know they're quite perplexing. How is this? They're very special associates. Just as the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna appears in Vrindavan, Krishna appears in Vrindavan once in a day of Brahma. The other 999 appearances of Krishna, the Vraja Leela are not performed. Krishna reveals his Vraja Leela, very, very special, once in a day of Brahma. But the other Leelas are there, and the Pandavas are there. So just as the associates of Krishna in Vrindavan are the same as the eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world. Correct? Your Mother Jasoda in Goloka is the same as Mother Jasoda in Gokula. I'm pointing up Goloka, the topmost planet of the spiritual realm. When Krishna appears here, it's not somebody else, it's Mother Jasoda, and etc. All of those associates are Krishna's eternal associates. And whenever Krishna performs his Boma Leela other than the Vrindavan Leelas, the Pandavas are there. The Pandavas are there right up until Krishna departs. And then they depart. So they're very special associates. Eternal associates. So here's another question. Arjuna takes the position of falling into Maya, so to speak. So is it possible for Arjuna to fall into Maya, like for us to fall into Maya? And when we fall into Maya, it's not the same as Arjuna falling into Maya. I remember hearing a class where someone asked, was Arjuna actually in Maya? And Prabhupada said, well, he was forgetting Krishna. He was in Maya, but Krishna restored his Krishna consciousness by speaking Bhagavad Gita. But that bewilderment of Arjuna was different than our bewilderment, in that for the purpose of instructing us, Krishna instructed his dear devotee Arjuna in the science of Krishna consciousness to assist Krishna in fulfilling that purpose. Krishna arranged and covered Arjuna with that special potency by which he became apparently bewildered, but not bewildered like us. You know, if we were like Arjuna, we just hear Bhagavad Gita once and it's over. We hear Bhagavad Gita a whole bunch of times and it's not over. So we don't question when Arjuna became bewildered that Arjuna is like us, a conditioned soul like us. We don't think like that. We don't speak like that. We don't regard Arjuna in that way. Or here's another one. It's the principle is similar, but it's not specifically the Pandavas. Can devotees make mistakes? What about a pure devotee? Can a pure devotee make a mistake? If Krishna induces the pure devotees to make a mistake, they can make a mistake. Like, you know, apparently Arjuna became bewildered what is duty. Like, here's a for example. For example, Maharaj Parikshit. You know who is Maharaj Parikshit? No. You know who the Pandavas are? No? Really? You know who Arjuna is? Yeah. He's one of the Pandavas. And, how to explain. How old are you? Six?
Yeah.
Six. Good guess. So how do you explain to a six-year-old who are the Pandavas? Well, they're his brothers, and they had a grandchild, the child of their child. Arjuna had a son, and the son's name was? Any of you boys know?
Abhimanyu.
And Abhimanyu became married to Uttara. And then when Abhimanyu was killed during the Kurukshetra battle, remember that? By many generals, they ganged up on him and cut his arms off, and like, they played dirty. You're not supposed to do that. They did that. They violated Dharma. They killed Abhimanyu. But the wife of Abhimanyu was pregnant when he was killed. So the child that was in her womb was Maharaj Parikshit. And in the Bhagavatam we find out that Ashvatthama was the son of a brahmana. Who is that brahmana's name? Starts with a D. Can't remember. Dronacharya? Dronacharya. And his wife's name was Kripi. These names are important because it's going to come up later what I'm going to be discussing. These Kripi is important. Drona and Kripi had a son, Ashvatthama. Ashvatthama is the one who cut off the heads of the five sons of the Pandavas. Now, Abhimanyu had already been killed. There were five sons, and he killed them. And there was a grandson that was yet to be born within the womb of Uttara. So he, Ashvatthama, nice guy, he sent a Brahmastra weapon to kill the child in the womb of Uttara. The purpose of that was there would be no descendants left to survive the Pandavas. So if the Pandavas were killed, then the Kauravas would become kings. That was his program, his motivation. Maharaj Parikshit was protected by Krishna. Uttara came running, Krishna, Krishna! This Brahmastra is coming to kill the child in my womb. Let me be killed, that's okay, but please protect this innocent child. Krishna, Krishna! Krishna protected the child. He stopped the Brahmastra weapon. And he gave his, you know the meaning of darshan? Darshan means to see, like you come and see the deities, and it's called deity darshan. You've heard that term before? No? Seeing the deity means, is called darshan. So seeing Krishna is also darshan. Seeing Krishna is darshan. Even before Maharaj Parikshit was born, he had Krishna's darshan. He saw Krishna. Have you seen Krishna? Even before he was born, he saw Krishna. Pretty cool. He was so dear to Krishna. So dear to Krishna. Not only protected him, he gave him, in fact, that's what his name means. Parikshit means the examiner. Because when he was born, he was always looking, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Is he here? Is he there? Where is Krishna? Like the six Goswamis. Hey Radhe, Vrajadevi, Ke Chalalite. Is he on the side of Govardhan Hill? Is he by the banks of the river Jamuna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? That was Maharaj Pariksha too. Very special. Now, there's a whole chapter after Maharaj Pariksit was born, dedicated, whole chapter on the glories of Maharaj Pariksit by the astrologers. They were giving his name and reading his chart and saying, you know, this and that and the other thing about how glorious is Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit is, he's way up there. He's unquestionably a pure devotee of Krishna. But Maharaj Pariksit made a mistake. He made an error. He offended a brahmana. Now, how is that possible? Because Krishna induced him to do that. That's how. When pure devotees make mistakes, if such a thing happens, it's not a mistake. It's something arranged by Krishna for some purpose of Krishna. Because why did Krishna do that? Krishna wanted to bring Maharaj Pariksit back to Godhead, and Krishna wanted to have Shukadeva Goswami speak Srimad Bhagavatam, so he set up the arrangement for Shukadeva Goswami to come and speak Srimad Bhagavatam to the perfect receiver of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the perfect speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was induced by Krishna, just as Arjuna was induced by Krishna to forget what is duty and become bewildered. It's not like our bewilderment. It's different. It's a transcendental pastime of Krishna to fulfill the purpose of Krishna. Have I lost anybody so far? Are you with me? Because now I'm going to ask some more trickier questions. Do you know who is Yudhisthira? You know who is Arjuna? Arjuna had an older brother. Of the five brothers, one was the oldest. And the oldest, his name was Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira's father was Yamaraj. You know who is Yamaraj, right? The Lord of Death? If people are very sinful, they're taken before Yamaraj. And he gives them, you know, their sentence. He's like the judge. And he gives the sentence. To which hellish planet do you get to go to? That's Yamaraj. He knows Dharma, and his agents, the Yamadutas, they bring before him persons that have violated Dharma. And then he sends them to the appropriate... So, those who engage in devotional service, there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. If you engage even a little devotional service, svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate means deliver, mahato bhayat, mahabhaya. So Prabhupada asked, what is mahabhaya? What's the greatest fear? Then he answered, it's seeing the Yamadutas. They're very fierce looking, you know, right out of the comic strips or something, you know, sharp pinching teeth and pointed ears and, you know, twisted faces and very scary looking persons. And not only they're scary looking, they're subtle. And they come to take the subtle body from the gross body and take the subtle body before Yamaraj for the destination of the hellish, which hellish planet does this person get to go to? And they take him to the hellish planet. Whew. But a little devotional service, will protect one from Mahapaya. We will not see the Yamadutas. That means even a little devotional service, one takes a human birth again, and in that human birth, one gets the opportunity to engage further in devotional service. Of course, we could always say, no, I don't want to do further devotional service. But we at least get the opportunity. It means you meet a devotee, because that's how you get the opportunity for devotional service. Someone gives you a prasadam. Someone gives you an invitation to the temple. Someone, the Harinam party passes by. Your devotional service has begun or resumed, whichever. One gets the opportunity to engage in devotional service, a human form, and again, some opportunity for devotional service. So here we are. We have some opportunity for devotional service. It either means someone just, some good fortune came our way for the very first time, or we're continuing our devotional service from our previous life that we didn't complete. And when one becomes a pure devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit was, then there's no question of, you know, deviation and having to undergo some reaction for that deviation. So now back to Yudhisthira being the son of Yamaraj. He was like his father, the emblem, the epitome. You know the word epitome? The topmost example of Dharma. He always upheld Dharma. And one of the principles of Dharma is you always speak the truth. You always speak the truth. And Yudhisthira always spoke the truth. It's for that reason, because Yudhisthira always speaks the truth, that Krishna approached Yudhisthira to say, what was the leela? Ashwatthama is dead. Go say, because here is Dronacharya, the father of Ashwatthama, is Dronacharya. Remember? Dronacharya. And his wife's name is Kripi. So Dronacharya is such an intense fighter. We have to find some way to defeat Dronacharya. And the way to defeat Dronacharya is he will become weakened in his fighting spirit if he hears that his beloved son, Ashwatthama, is dead. So Yudhisthira, if you go and tell him that Ashwatthama is dead, he knows that you'll never tell a lie. So he'll become convinced that Ashwatthama is dead. And then we can defeat Dronacharya. Go tell him. Now, it's an injunction, religious injunction, of, you know, all over the world, that you don't lie. And Yudhisthira never told a lie. So Yudhisthira hesitated, because he didn't want to act against Dharma. Correct? You with me so far? Then it is said that the chariot of Yudhisthira, previously, because of his elevated condition of Dharma, it never touched the ground, then it touched the ground. Now some say, this is, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explaining, some say the reason that Yudhisthira's chariot touched the ground is because he told a lie. He went and said to Dronacharya, Ashwatthama is dead. You know, some versions of Mahabharata said, under his breath, he said, the elephant, Ashwatthama is dead. Because that another an elephant was also named Ashwatthama. Some don't say that. But in any case, some Bhaktisiddhanta says, in his commentary on Mahabharata, he made a commentary on sections of Mahabharata where One of them is dispelling the misunderstanding that the reason Yudhisthira's chariot touched the ground is because he told a lie. Bhaktisiddhanta says that's a wrong understanding. His chariot touched the ground because he hesitated to follow Krishna's instructions. So what's the final instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami ma suchaha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and put this principle above all those principles of dharma. What's that? Mamekam sharanam. And Yudhisthira hesitated. Because the principle of what Krishna says to do takes precedent over anything and everything. And that's the highest standard of dharma. Take the lesser standard of dharma. Don't tell a lie. Where does that come from? It comes from Krishna. And if Krishna says, in this case, you make an exception, say, Ashwatthama is dead, then that becomes dharma. It's a little challenging for, you know, moralists. But that's the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Not that Krishna doesn't go around saying, na 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 na, tell lies, go ahead. That's not the standard. There was a purpose why Krishna did like that. It wasn't just so that Drona could be killed. That could have been arranged thousands, millions of other ways. He chose to teach a lesson, and Yudhisthira to be an instrument for teaching that lesson, which is the principle of surrendering unto Krishna goes above any other consideration. And there's lots of other considerations that become sometimes very perplexing. Have you ever been perplexed in your life of challenges of duty? Should I do this or should I do that? And there's something that says this should be done. Not just what I want to do, but, you know, higher principles, guiding life that says this should be done, and something over there that says that should be done, and one is contradictory to the other one. There's a nice passage in Mahabharata where Yudhisthira, the son of Yamaraj, is challenged by a yaksha. The yaksha comes out of a lake and says, you cannot drink water from this lake until you answer some of my questions. And one of the questions of the yaksha, there's a series of them, but keeping it simple, one of those questions was, there are situations where there's this dharma and that dharma, and they cancel each other out. And what is one supposed to do when that situation arises? You're having difficulty discerning principles of dharma. What do you do in that circumstance? Huh? Yudhisthira? And Yudhisthira said, what you say is true. It's dharma has become very complicated sometimes. And therefore, this famous phrase that Prabhupada would quote often, Mahajanayena Katasa Panta. You have to look to the activities of the Mahajanas, and then that becomes the standard of how to address complex situations of life. Because a person who is a cultured person, what to speak of a Krishna conscious person, a cultured person even, will follow the example set by great souls, Mahajans. And the yaksha accepted. Very good. Yes, that's how you understand. So there's such a situation, which I was discussing with another devotee, that's described in Canto 1, Chapter 7. So to get to Canto 1, Chapter 7, I'm going to do a really super quick review of the first six chapters of Canto 1. First six chapters, in one sense, is the essence of the whole Bhagavatam. Because it's six questions by the sages of Naimisharanya asked of Suta Goswami to get to the heart of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam that he heard, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. He was in the audience. Suta Goswami was in the audience. So the sages asked Suta six questions. He gave six answers, and in one sense, that's a capsule of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And the final of the six questions was, now that Krishna has left this earth planet, his pastimes are concluded, where are religious principles going to take shelter? Because when Krishna was present, just by the touch of his lotus feet upon the earth, auspiciousness was created, dharma was dispelled, everything was nice, now Krishna's lotus feet are gone from this earth planet. Now that Krishna is gone, where will religious principles take shelter? And that's in chapter 1. And at the end of chapter 3, the answer to that question comes, which is, just like when the sun sets in the west, but the moon may rise shortly thereafter in the east, as brilliant as the sun, thus the Srimad Bhagavatam made its appearance shortly after the departure of Krishna, the setting of the sun, comes then the rising of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun. It's the literary manifestation of Krishna. So Krishna departed and Krishna appeared in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So religious principles take shelter there. That ends chapter 3. Chapter 4 begins with the sages saying, could you describe the appearance of, you know, that moon that's as brilliant as the sun? Could you describe the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam? So chapter 4 is dedicated to answering that question. And in that chapter, very important chapter, it describes Vyasadeva's procedure of compiling the Vedas. It described that he was very special Veda Vyas, because in every cycle of the four yugas, there's someone that does the same service. It's a post. Because as the degradation starts to go down and down, someone who occupies that post and becomes empowered by Krishna, commonly, a jiva that's empowered by Krishna, takes the Vedas and makes them in a written form and divides them so they're more approachable and accessible for people in Kali Yuga. And then he explains them. And then he summarizes them in Vedanta Sutra. At the end of Dwarpa Yuga, every cycle of four yugas, someone does that service. This particular, in Tattva Sandarbha, there's quotations that explain. Parashra Muni says in Vishnu Purana, this particular Vyas is Krishna himself. And the work that he did is so special. I myself, Parashara says, I was previously also a Vyas. I didn't know that till I read Tattva Sandarbha. But, you know, the work that I did doesn't equal at all. It's so wonderful. It demonstrates he's Krishna himself. There's much more explanation that goes along with that. But so Vyas then took the one Veda, the Yajur Veda, and divided it into four. And in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, there's a really nice metaphor that's used to understand this. The metaphor is, just like a rich man may have a box full of jewels, but they're all mixed up. And he may ask someone, could you divide over here put the diamonds, and over there put the rubies, and over there put the emeralds, and over there put the sapphires. So someone comes and divides them into four. It's the same jewels. Disordered, then ordered. That's all Vyas did. He didn't do creative writing. He just ordered them to make them more approachable for people of the age of Kali. And then there's more detail described where there were 1 billion verses remaining, and those 1 billion verses he took, same from that one original Veda, and he composed the supplementary literature, the Puranas and Itihasas. It says specifically in scripture. And then he, in addition to dividing the 4 Vedas and the 1 billion verses into the Puranas that are available in the heavenly planets, for the earthly planets, he took those 1 billion verses, took 500,000 of 1 billion, not 1 million, but 1 billion, and arranged them in such a way that 100,000 became Mahabharat for this earth planet, and the other 400,000 became the Puranas for this earth planet. And he did it himself. He's Krishna himself. There's other details. But then, he summarized them all in Vedanta Sutra and set back to see, you know, how did it come out? And he felt despondent, and Narada came and told him why he was despondent. He had not sufficiently glorified Krishna directly in all of that work. Krishna's there, but kind of obscured, especially in certain portions, the Karmakanda portions, the Gyanakanda portions, and even in the Puranas. He's there, but not sufficient. That's why you're feeling that way. Because people have materialistic tendencies, and you've given the means to fulfill their material desires through the rituals found within the Vedas. So that's okay, you didn't say something wrong. But you've encouraged or endorsed or authorized those material propensities without sufficiently helping them understand the goal. What's the goal? To become connected to Krishna. So now I instruct you. You should compose one literature that just Krishna. And to do that, fix your mind in trance upon the personality of Godhead, and that which you realize will be the substance of that one literature. So he did, and then that's how Srimad Bhagavatam appeared. It's the fruit of that realization in trance by Vyas. That's how that answers the question. And that, so that ends up in, there's other things in between. Narada describes his previous life. I also meditated in trance. So you can do it too. He just gives his little autobiography from his previous life. So that's how the Bhagavatam appeared. So now the sages, they're going, wow, Krishna Katha is the highest dharma. Can you give us some Krishna Katha, please? Like, you know, a big serving of Krishna Katha. It flows very naturally. So, you know what the first, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, is the first direct narration of Krishna Katha by Suta Goswami to the sages, because they asked him. And so he gives. And you know what he talks about? He talks about the Pandavas. Because of their very special relationship with Krishna. And that which is in relation to Krishna is also Krishna. That's Prabhupada's explanation. He asked the question. They asked for Krishna Katha, and he's giving them about the Pandavas. Why didn't he just give them Krishna Katha? Because it's also Krishna Katha. Because of their intimate relation with Krishna. So then, the pastime, the Krishna Katha, the Leela, is... He's tired.
He's tired.
Yeah. See you later. He'll wake up when the next kirtan comes. He likes kirtan. The Leela begins with while the five sons of the five Pandavas, young boys like this boy, age young, were sleeping at night, Ashwatthama snuck into the place where they were sleeping and cut off their heads. Ashwatthama was not a nice person. And he then brought the heads before Duryodhana, thinking Duryodhana would be really happy that, you know, the heirs to the throne for the Pandavas are dead. Even Duryodhana was disgusted. And Duryodhana didn't get disgusted about too many things that were negative towards the Pandavas. Then Ashwatthama realized, uh-oh, I'm in big trouble. Even Duryodhana is pleased. He won't protect me. So he dropped the heads and he ran. Then in the morning when Draupadi went to greet her sons, he found their dead bodies. Arjuna came at once, took a blood-curdling vow. I'm going to bring back the head, severed head of Ashwatthama, so that when you're pouring oblations into the funeral pyre of your sons, you can stand on the head of Ashwatthama. And he went chasing after Ashwatthama. And this whole scene happened. Ashwatthama released a Brahmastra. Krishna, what to do? Krishna said, release a counter Brahmastra. Krishna gave the intelligence what to do. And lots of heat, but, you know, Arjuna was protected. He captured Ashwatthama, brought Ashwatthama back, ready to sever Ashwatthama's head right in front of Draupadi. Because he gave a vow he would do that. And Draupadi said, don't do it. Yudhisthira said, she's right, don't do it. Bhima said, do it. Then Krishna stepped in and said, you've given a vow. You have to keep your vow. And if you're thinking that because he's a brahmana, you'll incur the sin of killing a brahmana, don't worry about it because he's Brahmabandhu. He's not a brahmana, he's the son of a brahmana. So-called, unqualified son of a brahmana. So you won't incur sin. You have to keep your word. You have to abide by my word. But yet now here's your elder brother. I'm adding some things that Krishna didn't directly say, but Arjuna would never disobey his elder brother. Even if he wanted to do something, he wouldn't do it unless Yudhisthira said yes. If he wanted to not do something, if Yudhisthira said to do it, he would do it. Because he was so obedient, as he was to Krishna. Now what a dilemma. You know, kill Ashwatthama, don't kill Ashwatthama. What to do? And he's a virtuous person. He abides by virtue. And he's fully obedient to Krishna. He's fully obedient to his elder brother. And his wife, for whom he'd taken the vow, is saying, I release you from the responsibility of the vow, don't kill him. Now, analyzing that situation, this is the specifics of the discussion. Arjuna had to do something. So, one rendering of this situation is that Arjuna made a decision, made a choice. Like we may also in situations of life have to make a choice. You have to do something. So he, you know, being a upstanding follower of virtue, he made a choice. That's one, you know, and that's the lesson that we should take. There, in these circumstances of life, we must make some choice, as did Arjuna. Then there's another rendering that says that the message here was that Krishna wanted to show, he wanted to test Arjuna, and by testing Arjuna it wasn't like giving an exam to see if he would pass or fail, but rather to show to the world the incredible quality that Arjuna had. Why is it that Krishna chose Arjuna to speak Bhagavad Gita to, when he could have selected, for example, Yudhisthira, or any sage, or whoever he wanted to? He chose Arjuna. He chose Arjuna because Arjuna's incredible loyalty, bhaktosi me sakha cheti, his the degree of devotion of Arjuna to Krishna is infallible, invincible, perfect. He didn't waver ever. Krishna gave him the intelligence from within in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. He says, Krishna and Arjuna combined intelligence. But Krishna, where does intelligence come from? Where does remembrance and knowledge and forgetfulness come from? Where does everything come from? Krishna. And the dear devotee of Krishna gets the superlative intelligence from Krishna directly. How to, you know, a simple version is how to kill and not kill at the same time. How to uphold his vow without violating his vow, without violating the instructions of Yudhisthira. To do what Krishna said without violating what Krishna said. It's very difficult. So unless Krishna gives, in Arjuna's case, Krishna gave the intelligence. Now I'm tempted to read the commentary. I'll come back at the end and read the commentary. It's detailed and detailed and detailed. You know, the complexity of balancing dharma. But the overriding principle is, aside from, you know, this is a way to do it. There's in the series of verses, when Krishna was seeing the scene, which was created by his own internal potency, Krishna smiled. Specifically, Vishwanath says he didn't laugh. It wasn't like funny. He was just enjoying the display of Arjuna's quality of devotion. He became perplexed. But his perplexity is not the same as our perplexity, because he was fully dependent on Krishna and enabled him to go more deeply into understanding what was Krishna's intent. He didn't violate, because Krishna said, kill him. He didn't go against what Krishna said as his decision. He did what Krishna wanted. But how to do what Krishna wants at the same time as the other thing that his elder brother said? Don't kill him. So he did what both of them wanted, by principles of dharma. And that intelligence of how to do that was, in one sense, because of his wealth of understanding of the principle of dharma. But, more importantly, Krishna gave the intelligence how to rise to the occasion and do exactly what Krishna wanted. So Vishwanath says, Krishna's telling Arjuna, now, you took a vow to Draupadi, but also Draupadi has asked you to spare him. So you're obliged to follow her instruction, or her wish. And her wish is based on dharma. It's not whimsical, it's not just, in part, it's the soft-heartedness and compassion of Draupadi. Specifically, the soft-heartedness of Draupadi was, I know the feeling of a mother who has lost her sons by having their heads cut off. Kripi shouldn't have to undergo that. She didn't do anything wrong. Ashwatthama did something wrong, but Kripi shouldn't have to suffer the loss of her sons. And I, at least, I have my husbands. Kripi doesn't even have a husband. her only shelter is Ashvatthama. She shouldn't lose Ashvatthama. She shouldn't have to undergo that. But aside from that, that's that principal characteristic of a Vaishnava of compassion, Vishwanath gives other points in his commentary that it wasn't just soft-hearted as compassion, it's dharmic and dharmic. The dharma includes Drona was the teacher, and Kripi being the wife of the teacher, and Ashvatthama, the son of the teacher, shouldn't be killed. And Ashvatthama had no weapons. Although he was an aggressor, he had no weapons, and aggressors without weapons aren't to be killed. So by principles of dharma, she said the right thing, as well as principles of compassion, she said the right thing. And Arjuna, you're obliged to follow what virtuously and correctly Draupadi has said. So he did. Krishna gave him the intelligence. His vow specifically is he'll sever the head. So there's details in the Sanskrit to say he severed the jewel in the top knot of the hair of Ashvatthama, which represents his head. So that's what he severed. He kept his vow. He didn't break his vow. He upheld the principle of Kshatriya of maintaining his vow. Arjuna was so serious about vows. We know this from chapter 89 of Canto 10, where he took a vow. He would protect the brahmana who was one after another losing his sons. And if he didn't, he was unable to do so, he would enter into fire and take his life. So the brahmana was pleased with Arjuna's vow that that number 10 son, or whatever the number was, also disappeared. Didn't die, just disappeared. Although Arjuna had protected the house of the brahmana with his arrows, with, you know, invincible arrows, and somehow the son just disappeared. Arjuna looked here, there, everywhere, couldn't find him. He built a fire. He's going to enter into fire. He's going to keep his vow, because the Kshatriya keeps his vow. Arjuna didn't break his vow. Arjuna didn't violate what Krishna said, kill him. Although it may look like, because he didn't kill him, but he killed him without killing him, or he did both by the severing of this jewel in his top knot, and dismissing him from his place of residence, banished him. These two, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, these are suitable dharmic principles for punishing a Brahmabandhu. These two. So Arjuna acted according to dharma. He upheld the instruction of Krishna. He didn't go against the instruction of Krishna. He upheld his vow. He didn't break his vow. He upheld the word of Draupadi. He upheld the word of his brother. In Vishwanath's commentary, he quotes, Krishna was, and when he was smiling, he was thinking, I want to test Arjuna. Again, test meaning like, not like pass-fail. But, you know, demonstrate the qualification. He wanted the world to see. He wanted the first lila of the Bhagavatam to be understanding the principle of dharma. You do what Krishna wants. Same with Yudhisthira. If Krishna says, say Ashvatthama is dead, you say Ashvatthama is dead. Because surrender to Krishna is the highest principle. Then Krishna says, but then there's other conflicting instructions in dharma. What do? You turn to Krishna. And if you're a pure devotee like Arjuna is, you do Krishna's indication according to principles of dharma, not whim. Nice? Life is complex sometimes, more often than we like. Or if we find ourselves in situations that are, there are different forces playing on us, and, you know, things that aside from what we want to do, things that should be done, ought to be done, or principles of Dharma by which we should lead our lives. Devotees, because we're devotees of Krishna, it's not that we abandon principles of Dharma and say it's okay because we're devotees of Krishna. We'll just chant Hare Krishna, and if there's something bad, then it'll just get neutralized because we're chanting Hare Krishna. Then that's offense against the holy name. We don't do that. We must abide by Dharma. But that higher principle, the highest principle, all other dharmas are supported by that one. And the qualified devotee of Krishna can understand that. We should look to the Mahajans. This is a really wonderful example. Again, the first Leela of the whole Bhagavatam, to help us understand through the complexities of life how to decide what is to be done. You know, for worldly people, they don't, it doesn't matter to them what is to be done. If it feels good, do it. Or just do it. Consequences, smonsequences, you know, just do it. But that's not how virtuous people and devotees lead their lives, guided by principles of Dharma. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. And prescribed duty comes from the Vedas. That's why they're given. And then persons to guide us how to follow those principles of Dharma. The last point, why Draupadi didn't want Arjuna to fulfill his vow. He understood it was, you know, to relieve her heart of the grief. But it was, why should Kripi suffer? For this action, certainly by principles of Dharma, one who is killed like that, that person needs to be relieved of their suffering that they're going to undergo by death penalty. That's Dharma. It's suitable. He should be killed. Not out of revenge, but a principle of Dharma. Then this other principle is, when doing Dharma, when doing the right thing, who may be adversely affected? A mature person thinks like that. An immature person doesn't even enter their thought process. Just do it. The Dharma. Do it. Kill him. Who may be adversely affected? That's a mature dharmic person. That's Draupadi. Not just, you know, sentiment or compassion, but, you know, deeply considering. Who may be adversely affected by this dharmic act? And how to take that into consideration carefully when going forward with what needs to be done. Don't do it. It's how to do it in such a way that those that could be adversely affected, at least the consideration is given. That a mature person thinks like that. And that was one of the glories of that Krishna wanted to show for Arjuna. He did it in such a way that Kripi didn't have to suffer. In fact, the Puranas describe when he was banished, it was a long banishment. He's going to be the next Veda Vyas. The Puranas say. Ashvatthama, the same, you know, bad person. I mean, he gets mercy and becomes benefited by that mercy because in part his becoming corrupt was due to bad association with Duryodhana. People can become bad due to bad association. Good people can become bad due to bad association. So he was relieved of the bad association. He underwent the austerities to atone for the really vile actions that he took, becomes very qualified. It doesn't always happen like that, but that's what it happens. Ashwatthama. Oh, that's the discussion for this evening. I thought I would share this. Different ways of seeing scripture, but it's an important passage. I hold that it's especially important because, it's the first lila that's described, the first Krishna katha that we hear, the whole Bhagavatam. This principle is the principle that receives Vyasadeva's attention. First canto Bhagavatam lays out principles that the rest of the Bhagavatam further embellish, expand upon. Yeah.
Maharaj, thank you. A clarification, then a question. So, when the deliberation was happening on what to do with Ashwatthama, I don't know the exact wording, if you can elaborate on it, but Krishna essentially said that it's okay to kill
him.
Yes,
he did.
Yeah.
He did.
Okay, so then my question is, if Arjuna had decided to kill Ashwatthama...
He'd taken a vow to kill him. Yeah. He'd taken a vow to sever his head.
Yeah. Like, you mentioned that Draupadi was... I forgot the word that you used, but she was very considerate of the fact of not only the Dharma, but also of what was the other considerations, like what would happen to
Kripi.
Yeah, Kripi. And so, you know, but Arjuna, not considering that, but just considering that Krishna is saying I should do this, and if he kills, is one better than the other? Because if he had killed, then he's following Krishna's order, but because he didn't kill, he also did good. But I mean.
Well, yes. The answer to your question is yes. Krishna gave an order. Now, the super excellent quality of Arjuna is Arjuna understood Krishna's intent. So he did kill and not kill, because part of what Vishwanath says is that Krishna also said you should honor the wish of your wife. You took the vow to help her with her grief of losing her five sons in this brutal way. Now she's asking you, so you should oblige her. So that was another. So that's another instruction. Now, it doesn't say that specifically in the verse. When in the verse it says, there's no sin, go ahead. And in Vishwanath, he's getting the thought process of Arjuna, the thought process of Krishna. Somehow he can read Krishna's mind. And Krishna's, conveying this understanding to Arjuna. So the answer to your question is, supposing somebody wasn't as qualified as Arjuna, and Krishna said kill him, then capital punishment for a murderer is dharmic. That's your question? Yes.
So I heard you indicating that the ability of Arjuna to uphold the dharmic principles, even though Krishna used the word you can kill him, but Krishna internally was guiding Arjuna.
Yes.
And Arjuna was able
yes.
to execute it exactly what Krishna
exactly, did. Exactly. That's the point.
So that is because Arjuna
was a great devotee. He was a pure unalloyed devotee, an eternal associate of Krishna,
yes.
that understood Krishna's will.
And by Arjuna doing that, Krishna was demonstrating also
yes.
like that. But ordinary people,
don't have
that. There's no way for them and either Krishna to enlighten them or them to be able to understand Krishna's.
Yes. Now, so that and that kind of ordinary person is all of us, and so all of us should take pause, you know, mode of goodness pause, and reflect on, you know, before we just, here's Dharma, here I come. We pause and consider. Now, supposing we consider and we don't have the qualification to understand the intent behind, you know, this dharmic principle, we have to do something. But, you know, taking that step of pausing and reflecting and examining the intention behind will help us progressively become more qualified and understand more clearly how to fulfill, you know, Krishna's desire. Now, the fulfill Krishna's desire comes in those perplexing situations, according to Mahabharata, by looking at the example of Mahajans. And we're not to, like, speculate or something. Imagine this Mahajan said this because, or, you know, we look at what they did. And this is a very nice example. Arjuna isn't listed amongst the 12 Mahajans, but he's, you know, certainly in the category of a great soul. Mahajan. Great soul. So we should, even when carrying out our religious duty, understand, try to understand, what is the intention in this instruction? Whatever it is, whatever the circumstances. It's not easy, but it's a responsibility. By asking that question alone, it helps us develop the capacity to receive an answer. If we don't ask the question, the answer could be banging on our head and we won't hear it, see it. Subal.
I appreciate very much the point that you explained about Arjuna's quality of supreme loyalty. And because of that quality, Krishna chose him to play the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
And, you know, I understood that as a principle also that, you know, in what you've been explaining right now, is something that we have to take, you know, as one of the main instructions of this pastime. And I'm thinking in terms of, you know, the loyalty towards the spiritual master and the spiritual master's service and mission. And specifically, I'm thinking, just remembering back, you know, in the beginning of my Krishna consciousness, I had the opportunity to have some relationship with some very advanced Prabhupada disciples. Oh, I'm thinking of one particular that now is not part of ISKCON. And then how he was a wonderful devotee, but it was very deep, great service to Srila Prabhupada, but now it's not. What is that that we have to be in guard, you know, in terms of maintaining that loyalty to following, you know, the mission and serving the mission of the spiritual master?
Well, in one word, pride. You know, in the the teachings of Madhurya Kandamani, there's four categories of anarthas, and the final one is anarthas that arise from a little success in devotional service. Labha, Puja, and Pratishtha, one becomes covered again by, you know, being eager to receive the recognition or distinction or honor or praise or situation. And then one's Krishna consciousness becomes lost. So when pride comes, a qualified person can fall. So it's not the only thing, but it's a really big one, especially you're given in light of the example that you've given, someone that has done wonderful, wonderful service. Because when those things happen, then other things can happen, like becoming indulgent and less careful with the mind and senses. Complacent. Slackening in submission is the same as complacency. And when a slackening in submission comes, then we're vulnerable to the force of Maya, and Maya is ruthless. Maya doesn't consider, oh, he or she is a nice devotee, they've done so much service, I won't grab a hold of them. But if submission slackens, Maya is immediately there. And my submission may slacken if I think, you know, I'm somebody. I've done all this wonderful service. I'm deserving of something. I want to be an enjoyer of my successes in devotional service. Yeah?
Yeah, yes, Maharaj, I can see that. And one thing that always sort of puzzles me is the rationale that, you know, when you make that choice that, okay, there's some sort of rationale that you're following or you're fulfilling or you're understanding what's behind the purpose of the spiritual master. I mean, some of these personalities are still, you know, leading people. And they have a rationale, you know, they even claim, you know, that they present in Prabhupada like that.
Sure.
So that rationale is the thing that scares me the most. You know,
yeah.
That you actually do believe. It's not that you feel, okay, I'm failing in following the instructions. But
well, sometimes people do understand and they just resign themselves to it. And others do as you're describing. There's, you know, there's a lot of diversity out there in the world of, you know, illusion. And so there's different varieties of illusion that can cover one, not only one. Yes, Balaram.
Manoj, I think you mentioned about this Ashwatthama becoming Vyasadeva.
Is that Vedavyas?
Vedavyas.
Yeah.
So is it the current?
No.
Or is it next?
Next.
So what was that mercy, you know, the way he did, I don't know, what is that mercy, is it from Dronacharya, because of his father, or what kind of mercy?
Well, I don't know the history, but most likely, in principle, some association with some great soul and gets some mercy somewhere along the way. So one is just neutralizing the reaction. And then another is getting mercy to become so qualified. So somewhere there's some mercy that came in, will come into his life. I don't know enough. I'm sorry, I can't elaborate because I don't know the detail of that scriptural reference. But I've heard it many, many times, and it's been, you know, that's all I can say about it. Some kind of mercy from some kind of exalted Vaishnava to become so qualified to become Vedavyas.
It's also understood that he did atonement, right?
Well, the atonement is just to neutralize. Then there's, you know, that's not, you don't become Vedavyas by neutralizing. That's his point. You have a question? Yes.
Maharaj, you talked about devotees and devotees generally, they don't do mistakes. They do mistakes as induced by...
Well, pure devotees are, there's four defects of conditioned souls, and pure devotees are free from those four defects of the conditioned souls.
Yeah. devotees like Arjuna, when they are into, put into perplexed condition, they get the mercy and guidance from the Lord Krishna.
Yes.
And also, generally, devotees, they don't do harm, they will be mostly good to others, they do abide by principles.
Yes, correct.
So,
yes.
And also, they get the directions from Lord Krishna.
Okay, those two points. Now,
what I'm trying to ask is, persons who are not devotees, I think they need more guidance than the devotees, because devotees generally, they do good things.
Well, devotees can give them the guidance. So the devotees have to be active in by example as well as by word. Guidance can be both ways. You know, like in your workplace, you can give guidance by good example. You have to run around the office and have kirtan and sit down and have everybody have a Bhagavad Gita class during their lunch break. But you can give guidance by example.
Devotees get some realization from Krishna directly.
I understand what you're saying, and so the non-devotees need guidance, and to who's going to give the guidance? I'm saying it's the devotees. Those who have can give. Have received, they can give. And how do you guide someone that doesn't want guidance? We've had lots of experience with that in our lives. You know, it bounces. So now how do you get that person that doesn't want guidance to receive guidance because they really need it? You know, elevate by your association and prasadam and other things. Yes?
Maharaj, it is more than a question. I'm looking for clarification on this confirmation. You said, Lord Krishna, if he wanted, there could have been millions of ways to defeat Brahmacharya.
Yes.
But he chose the way in which Maharaj Yudhishthira was somewhat uncomfortable or he was hesitant.
Yes.
Was it a pastime of Krishna?
Yes.
So that whatever he says is higher than anything we know of.
Yes. Okay. That's the highest principle of Dharma. It's an example of 1866 Bhagavad Gita. And then the other half of, you know, Sarvadharmam pratyajam mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo. If you do this, there won't be papa.
Oh, I see.
Ah. Because Yudhishthira was thinking, I can't do this. It's sinful. And I don't do sinful. I only do virtue. But you follow this higher principle, there's no sinful. Maasuchaha. You got it. Yes.
Maharaj, I just wanted to get a clarification from you, Maharaj. The three things that I see from the past tense that you described of Arjuna.
Go ahead.
Was first to establish religion, to establish the Srimad Bhagavatam, that was the first to answer the question that was asked. This was kind of depicted there with this past time. To lay the foundation. Am I right?
This pastime doesn't describe the manifestation of Srimad Bhagavatam. What comes in chapter 4 and then the beginning parts of chapter 7, you know, the meditation of Vyas, that describes the manifestation of Srimad Bhagavatam. But the pastime begins after that. And then the Atmarama verse and then they go, wow, you know, Krishna Katha. So then the Krishna Katha, that's the pastime. Which is not the manifestation of Srimad Bhagavatam, but that's already been described.
And then the follow-up question that I have, Maharaj, is my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong in understanding this, is this that this pastime that took place is again similar to the pastime that took place in the Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, it's for the benefit of all everybody
leaving. Yes.
Right?
Yes. Krishna teaches us by interacting with his devotees in both cases. That's principles shown. Okay? Yes?
This is kind of trying to understand
or a clarification basically. It's about Arjuna. He was bewildered initially. He didn't want to fight because his teachers, his relations, and everybody was in the opening party. But Krishna gave him the advice, and then he fought. But in spite of understanding everything, when he sees Abhimanyu, his son, dead, he once again breaks down.
Yes.
So our situation is also kind of similar. Like, how do we take that? Like, we get all this knowledge, but in everyday situation, again we fall down, or like emotions or other things.
We're human.
Like Arjuna, in spite of saying, okay, Krishna is, you are everything. Like, you know, he fought and... But still, when he sees his own son...
I got the point. And my response is, we're human. Or you know, we, although we know we're not this body, we identify with the body. Our knowledge is not matured to the point of full realization. We fall prey to the tendency to identify with the body. We're human.
What would make us strong, or at least go in
that? Krishna consciousness. We stay fixed in... when we receive the fullness of Krishna's mercy, and the dial is always on, we don't go into being the enjoyer, or being complacent, or being, you know, slackened in our regard of our relationship with Krishna. If we're Krishna conscious at all times, then that we don't become overwhelmed by the illusory energy. So say it in a simple way. If you're looking at light, you're not seeing darkness or shadow. You're seeing light. The shadow is back there, and you're seeing light. Just continue to look to the light. Tamasima jyotir gama. Jyotir gama, back to God, go to the light. That's how. And it's not sometimes, sometimes not, sometimes, sometimes not. When it's like that, that's you know, the unsteady bhakti standard that, you know, we're very familiar with. And then sometimes not, then that's when that slackening of submission comes, that's when the bewilderment comes.
Still fall and get
yeah. It. So how to prevent that, which is your question. Just continue going toward Krishna with devotion, faith, and love. And then we're not matured. We're unsteady in doing that. So there's sometimes, sometimes not. That's the unsteady bhakti position, stage that we're in. So how do you get unsteady to steady? By anartha nivritti, by eradication of impure things. It's not by becoming hard-hearted and I don't care about, you know, the sufferings of others because I know I'm not this body. It's not like that. Compassion is natural, but compassion then goes deeper. Anything else from the ladies' side? Yes, Krishnarsha.
That the highest principle of religion is doing what Krishna wants one to do. So you paint the picture where Arjuna had to make a decision in the face of different personalities having different desires.
Yes.
And to perform a particular action.
Yes.
So I thought of one particular personality that functioned or acted in a way that it's not absolutely clear that the personality was acting, you know, according to Krishna's desire, because it's not directly stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm thinking of Akura. So he made a statement.
He's a puzzling personality. He's a very enigmatic personality.
He made a suggestion to Shatadanta that Yudhishthira should have Satyajit follow in the footsteps of his brother, and based on that, Shatadanta, of course, I guess, not being a Dharma person, he committed the action. But on the part of Akura, when Krishna later on after killing Shatadanta, one reads that Krishna's very loving towards Akura. And
yeah.
So that particular thing of making that suggestion, of course, he didn't support Shatadanta after that at all. He called his action, you know,
right.
Immediately made
right.
What his position was. But just the statement, making such a statement, how did that fit into, you know, following Dharma? Was there some sway?
Akura wasn't on the same level as Arjuna. Akura was not on the same level of pure devotion as Arjuna. According to the Acharya's commentary, one of the lower, baser motivations of Akura in making this statement was he was upset that King Satrajit had given Satyabhama not to him to marry. Because there was some, according to the Acharyas, I don't know the history, but some kind of indication from Satrajit that he would be happy to see his daughter Satyabhama become married to Akura. And when that didn't happen, he was, you know, upset with Satrajit. So there, you know, the higher motivation is Krishna wanted the jewel to go to Ugrasena, and what Krishna wants, that should be done, and, you know, take care of it, get the jewel and see that it gets to Ugrasena. But, you know, it wasn't all pure devotion. Us wasn't on the same platform of Krishna consciousness as Arjuna. Arjuna only wanted one thing. What Krishna wants. Nothing else but what Krishna wants. Does that address your question? You know, where is it coming from to make such a statement? You know, some kind of darkness in his heart. Which is, you know, it's puzzling. Where does that come from? Because we list him as one of the persons who achieve perfection from prayer. He saw the personality of Godhead when taking his bath in the river Jamuna. He saw the spiritual world. How can you see the spiritual world if you've got stuff in your heart that doesn't belong there? It's puzzling. And it's not the same as, well, you know, Krishna had a purpose to teach, and so he put, as he put Arjuna into this situation of being apparently covered like us or Maharaj Parikshit. It's not the same. You're not on the same platform. It's puzzling. There's some other puzzling personalities. Karna, very puzzling personality. They're very complex. Yes?
Hare Krishna, my question is on the lines as one of the Mahatajis, and you replied saying, how do we prevent from falling repeatedly?
Yes.
I've seen some devotees know that in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, whenever they read that something is not good for Krishna consciousness, they're able to renounce very easily. Whereas, for me personally, it takes a lot of effort. So I was wondering how come they're able to so renounce something very easily. Is that something to do with their past mercy or some sukruti or something from Krishna himself?
Well, at least, you know, it may be you know, prior devotional service, they come to that position, and on the strength of their prior devotional service, they can go easily go beyond something. It may also, you know, another possibility is their variety of attachments are different. They've got their own private attachments that are different than the ones that, you know, they could easily give up. And the ones that you can easily give up may be the very ones that they're attached to, and you have a problem giving up the ones that they're very easily can give up. Follow. So that's an explanation of why, now what to do. That was the question this afternoon, what to do. Why and what to do. Okay, we're questioned out. One more, okay?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj, one of the instructions Krishna gave that do your prescribed duty and keep them in mind.
Yeah, always remember Krishna.
Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. But how, if you don't even know what your prescribed duty is, how does one find out what their prescribed duty is?
Guru Sadhu Shastra. Oh, come on, Maharaj, make it easier. But Guru Sadhu Shastra, that's our standard points of reference. So Guru doesn't just mean, you know, those persons who may give diksha, that's Guru. Guru means teacher, you know, those that guide us in our spiritual life, those persons that transparently can represent the message of Scripture. Through those persons we can learn what is our duty. And then, you know, we should also be studying Scripture to understand what is duty. And, you know, we look at our life through the light of Scripture, and then we understand, oh, that's like, you know, a grihastha, a duty of a grihastha. What is that? Through Scripture, we know. The duty of a sannyasi, the duty of a wife, the duty of a husband, the duty of a child. In the light of, etc. So through Scripture. And then sadhus, we learn from them. And then, you know, it can not just be general, it can be very specific, you know, personal, in relation to me, my situation of life. Obviously, we need guidance. We can't just, like, read books and then understand everything. We need guidance. We need persons that can guide us. Therefore, Guru and Sadhu are there also. And that's the way that we can learn. We need such guidance. What do you think? Yeah? As we go along, just adding to this, as we go along in the course of purification, then more and more details about what is my duty, is, you know, specific to the circumstance that your life, you know, through purification, we find out so many things that we didn't understand before purification, of even what we didn't know. We find out more of what we didn't know. And then, so we can do, and, you know, the knowledge. Yeah? All right. 8 o'clock. Sri Vallabha, you want to lead us in kirtan for a little while? I knew you would say yes. You get to talk to everybody. See you now. harmonium do you like? This one or that one?
Broken one.
Okay. Broken.